You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Emily Harris. She's calling from Brooklyn. Emily, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks so much, Brainerd. It's a pleasure.
Let's talk about what you're working on now, just to get right into your work, what's happening in your studio, what you're preparing for or are recently involved in. What's happening at the moment for you?
Sure. So I recently installed a show in a new project space in Montclair, New Jersey. And when I was first invited to show there, Kim, who's sort of the collaborator, director, she told me that when I would be exhibiting, that which is in February, March, and April, it's still up through mid-April, that we might be able to see our breath because it could get so cold. So I thought that that was kind of interesting and a unique part of an element of this exhibition space. So,
wait a minute. So let me just be clear. You're saying in the exhibition space, they're saying it's so cold that while you're in the space, you might be able to see your breath because it's so cold.
Exactly, because it's so cold. And I thought that was, you know, it's kind of a unique thing. And it was also interesting to me because by changing one element, you make something else visible. And that's part of my, like, an overarching interest in my work is making invisible relationships or connections visible physically. So I took that as my starting point for the site-specific show. It has to be site-specific in part for Kim because it's the third floor of a home, and it has quite a lot of character, and so she invites people who, in their practice, do site-specific work. And
so before you tell me exactly what it is, so this is, I mean, I love those kind of spaces. This
right.
is a kind of an apartment gallery, essentially,
right.
or
yep.
yeah,
yep.
run by an individual, run by an artist, or how is it?
Run by an artist, but it's an apartment gallery, but it's not that she lives there. There are eaves that slope, like it's basically empty, and there are eaves that slope down, and it's really raw. You can see the lath, and you can see the roofing nails coming through. There are two arched places over a window. It's split, so there's a wall, a dry wall in between. And it kind of has this aggressive feeling in a way, but also nurturing to me. And
it's a new space.
So yeah, it's unique.
She recently started that space.
Yep. I'm the second show up in it. Yeah. So it was really fun to work with her and to work with it. And so going from the idea of being able to see your breath by changing the temperature, I thought more about, you know, what are some other ways that we might be able to see our breath? And I had this vision for, this desire to see a breath in glass. And so I asked an artist that I know, Megan Biddle, if she would be able to, what it would look like if it's possible to blow one exhale into glass. And she said it was. She emailed me a picture of doing it, and she said that in the process, you really have to draw in a deep inhale and then a very controlled exhale out. So it's this, So she emailed me a picture, and it looks like a kidney or something, the way that this particular first one looked, and it has a tail that comes off of it because that's the part where the glass falls off of the blowpipe. So And it doesn't, it didn't really matter to me what it looked like, because I was more interested in just it being the thing, it being one exhale into glass. But it was interesting that it had this very organic shape to it. So I went down to Philly, which is where she lives, and I filmed her making it. And she, that was really fun, being in the fabrication space is a very, it feels very set, like sensitive, and saturated with these different
well, so what was
tactile
just
qualities.
To be clear, so what exactly was she doing in that fabrication space? Is this, is she making glass?
So she's blowing glass.
She's
and,
blowing glass. Okay.
Right, she's blowing glass, and I filmed her doing it, and so the space is, it's very hot, it's very loud. There's an air compressor going, and there's glowing ovens, and so it's an interesting space to be in. It was the first time I had ever been in a glass fabrication studio. So she makes it, and it doesn't take very long, and it either works or it doesn't. So I started by watching her spin the blowpipe in the glass, the molten glass. So she's there for a while spinning, 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 just with her fingertips. And then once it gets hot enough, she has to swing it back and forth as she comes to this sort of platform area. And she, it's kind of like, I was thinking about it as a performance because it's a couple of minutes long and she has to be very concentrated and present when she's making these things. So I get, there's a really nice moment I like where you can see her eyes kind of shift and get really focused, and she blows it, and then I pan over and go from her face along the pipe to the glass form. And this one, the one that was made in this space, just looked really kind of crazy. It had two bubbles. I didn't realize at the time how odd it was. But so it was great to work with Megan. And one thing that I didn't, you know, I don't have the experience with glass and that material to know what questions to ask necessarily. But what she changed in the process of making it was, normally you score the glass so that it breaks off cleanly, but she knew that that would change the form, so she let it just, the glass just drip off the end of the blowpipe. And that, some, you know, that made it explode. Sometimes it just exploded because the glass gets so thin, it can't, it doesn't stay intact. And sometimes it got so thin, but it did stay intact, and it had a wobble to it. Like when these forms were done, they were so thin they felt like cellophane in some parts, not all of them. And so they were fragile. And we had an interesting time putting them on cardboard. Like bubble wrap was a little too much sometimes. So art handling kind of reached a new level. And we taped them with artist tape to cardboard and put them in my rental car, and I just drove them up to the exhibition space directly so I didn't have too much other transport. And while I was doing that, I could feel every single bump in the road. But I was able to get them there safely. I got them there safely. So that was a nice part of the process that I didn't expect, like needing to just have this radical care for these objects. And which speaks to the project in a way of breath and it being a strong but fragile physical thing.
So is that so describing the whole exhibit there, what was in it? It was those pieces essentially.
Right. So it was I broke two of them, but I installed five of the glass pieces and I suspended them with monofilament and hung them in one of the more open arched areas in this space. And then I had I projected the film that was a little larger than life size of Megan, making one of them. And I had the audio, a separate audio piece of the fabrication space, which I uploaded to SoundCloud, and I thought it was interesting because SoundCloud automatically tagged it as industrial music. So I thought that was kind of neat. And then I had I read the audio of our email correspondence between Megan and I, because I had a lot of questions for her and she had questions, and so we were just emailing back and forth. And it was at an interesting time because Trump had just been elected, so there was a lot of political daily things, marches. I went to Standing Rock. There were, outside things that came into the project as well through that email exchange.
Great. That sounds exciting. So there's a number of things in there, and how did that, and that show went up already? That show has already been produced and is up now, or
it's
that's over?
It's up now through April 14th.
And how was the reaction to that show? How did people experience it? When people came in the show, could they see their breath? Was that part of it, or did
well,
that?
Well, no. Okay. I mean, it was quite a beautiful day, actually. Like, unusually warm, which is both wonderful and frightening at the same time. And so that part of the breath didn't happen. But people talked about feeling a visceral reaction to the forms and feeling this body relationship to the glass forms hanging in the space. And then how there was this contrast between the room itself, the space itself, and those fragile forms. And I had a couple of the two that broke, I had them out so that people could touch the material, touch the glass, because it's not something that you don't see glass that thin very often. I mean, actually, I don't think you see the glass that thin. So it was interesting to include that.
That is interesting. So that's a great show that you kind of walked us through in the whole process of that show. As
right.
you look to future shows, because we're understanding a little bit about how you approach materials and work, what else are you thinking about or working on now as it may or may not relate to what you just walked us through?
Right. Well, I kind of see this as the first of a larger series. Not kind of, I do. I see this as the first of a series of projects of making breath visible. And I have two, I'm collaborating with a vocalist based in Brooklyn. Her name is Anaïs Maviel, and I'm not sure what we'll do together yet, but I went and made an audio recording of her practicing at her home in her music studio. So that will be something that, and I'm interested in continuing these alternative spaces, not necessarily indoors, but maybe something outside I'm not sure yet with that, but that's
by continuing with these alternative spaces. You mean creating them or working with these type of kind of apartment galleries or alternative spaces? Like,
I think
creating them yourself, you know, or finding.
I think creating them. In my past installations, I've done things in an architectural design studio, and in the walkway. Where I used thread, and the way that that connection became visible was that the threads were moving based on other people's movements. So the viewer became part of the piece, and the central air of the building became part of the piece. So my hope is that people kind of discover the interrelationship of their part in the space around them, and how they're also the threads were interrupting the walkway, so it would stop people short sometimes. In the architectural, because they were so thin, you didn't see them until you were kind of up on them. And there was a security guard that was there, and he would tell me what had happened that day and what people had said. And he was saying that it was kind of like fog, that he felt like with fog you don't you can't see something until you're right up on it. And so he felt like that was similar with the threads. And some people didn't see them too, which was interesting to me. And they just kind of like went over their bodies. And like there, as I was installing, I would kind of watch how people interacted. And there was a UPS guy who was probably just in his zone, work zone, and he walked through the threads, and they just went over him, which was really neat, too. So
when you talk about future spaces like that and creating them,
right,
these kind of alternative spaces, I'm really interested in that. How will you create them? Will you find spaces and kind of inhabit them, like pop-up spaces, or are you talking about creating a space that you would curate and would exist for a while? What do you mean by creating them in the future?
Well, it could be more of like a Fluxus thing. Like it could just be more of it's in public space and people don't necessarily know about it. That's how I'm thinking about the piece with Anais, that we together would create a piece that we could perform in different locations. That wouldn't really be titled, wouldn't really be, maybe, you know, I'm still thinking about it. I'm not really sure yet. But I guess that would be one end of the spectrum.
It's a great form, because it seems to me it's been used, I mean, for, I guess, over a decade or maybe, you know, many decades, but... You know, in New York, you hear about that more. Artists have gone into the Whitney Biennial from apartment shows and really come to great recognition. They're by no means or don't have to be sort of small events. And, Fluxus events were great, but they were also maybe necessarily, you know, out of the marketplace and often out of the view of the mainstream art world, whereas today these kind of spaces, you know, are part of that fold, it seems, can be brought right into that world and are part of the alternative, so to speak, quote unquote, is also part of the mainstream art world in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's exciting to hear of making more of those, because that's a great way to collaborate, which seems a big part of your practice too, collaboration.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like I think it's, for me, it's all about collaboration, really, like collaborating with materials or collaborating with people. And it makes it, for me, a bigger project and a more connected project, which is one of the themes of one of my interests.
I like that. And about funding, I want to just ask about how all this is funded, a question that I often ask, because everybody's working in so many different mediums, some of which is in the marketplace more than others, and you're working with fabricators and other people. How do you manage all that? Is it do you rely on the objects themselves selling, or does funding come from other sources?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think it's really important to pay artists, and so I pay everyone that I work with what I would feel I would want to be paid. Like, if they don't have, I ask them what they feel is appropriate, and some people don't necessarily have an answer, and so we work through it, and so I'm paying everyone that I'm working with, and the way that I pay myself is just through my own, like, day job. I work for different artists. I'm an assistant to them, and work for quite a few people, and hopefully, you know, I want to write a few grants. I just got a residency, which is great. But hopefully, I don't at all depend on selling my work to put in back into the process. It would be nice, but it's not something that I rely on. So I use my own daily life to generate funds for the projects I work on.
So I want to ask you the question I ask everybody at the end, which is, what is it that you're reading now or looking at in terms of books, anything? It could be off topic as well.
Well, I am looking at, I'm reading kind of in different bits and pieces, a book called For Space by Doreen Massey, where she talks about the way we think about space and how we sometimes create more of a static place than a potential place, and how that's a constricting thing. So I'm reading about this and becoming more aware of my own ways of defining space and maybe my habits of constricting. And then I'm also reading essays by Lucy Rigueray. She's a French philosopher, and she has this really sensual, body-oriented way of writing that interests me. And then James Baldwin. I'm reading a James Baldwin book. So, pretty diverse.
Emily, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's been great learning about your work and process and the future ideas. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Brainerd, thank you so much. You're doing such good work. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.